Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from Lighthouse Hockey and the Fans First Sports Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me, as always, on this Sunday evening via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, a lot has transpired since the last time we spoke. A lot of significant things have transpired for the Islanders. We're going to take a bit of a more general kind of look at things right now. But as of right now, as of this recording, December 17th, 2023, where are you at in your feelings towards the New York Islanders? Positive, negative, neutral, worried, confident? What is it?
I'm worried because I feel like there's something possible here.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, because this team has shown that it is good. Mm-hmm. It has the pieces needed to contend in a really tricky division. It's shown it's had the pieces to weather some storms. I think it's better. This team, if you were an outsider looking at the Islanders, you would say they're probably a little bit better than I gave them credit for before the season started, 30 games in. But at the same time, they have squandered away so many opportunities this season that it's so far from comfortable that you feel that another swoon would really be detrimental. And, you know, last time we spoke, we had this week, we mapped out the week as best we could, and I think we did a pretty good job of where the Islanders would be this side of the Montreal game, because we both kind of said they're going to lose that game.
Yeah.
It feels like that game, and it's going to, how important that is will be based on what they do in the games leading up to it, because on the other side of the Montreal game, and this is why I'm worried, the Islanders are now entering the tough, the most important part stretch of season when you look at opponents that they've had to date, right? It's we've seen a couple weeks where the Flyers will pop up, or the Capitals will pop up once, and the Hurricanes or whoever you think that the Islanders are competing with right now. But if you look from now until the end of the year, Oilers, Capitals, Hurricanes, Penguins, Capitals, Penguins. So yeah, two games against the Penguins, two games against the Capitals, and a game against the Hurricanes. That's five divisional games in a row on the spin to close out December. Yeah,
that's
so rough. This is why I am encouraged. At the same time, I'm worried, and I'm basically worried because I am encouraged. Because if this was if the Islanders weren't showing signs of this, I would just be like dreading what's coming up, rather than kind of excited for it. Like they're in the thick of a fight. Yeah, I just don't know if they're going to win it. So, and it might have got a lot of heart. And obviously, I think there's a tinge more anxiety sprinkled in, because Bo Horvat's status is completely a mystery as we record this on Sunday night. So,
yeah, that's going to be looming over everybody. He took a spill at the end of the Habs game. Seemed to have come up favoring his wrist a little bit. We'll talk about that in a minute. Before we dive into all of this, reminder that we are on Patreon, patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety. Plans start as low as $2 a month. You get ad-free episodes, bonus podcasts, written posts, and a whole bunch more. And if you sign up for our Country Club tier through the month of December, you can get an Islanders Anxiety Club iron-on patch. You still have a little bit of time, but don't wait. Sign up for Country Club tier today and get that patch when they start shipping. All right? So it's funny. The way you put it, like, they're in the fight, but I don't know if they're going to win the fight, I think fully encapsulates the season so far. And when I was thinking about recording this episode, I was looking back at these four games, and each one I thought could almost be its own podcast, which is a really crazy thing when you think about it. I mean, we had the historic drama and lunacy of the overtime win over the Leafs. We had the averted near disaster of the win against the Ducks. We had the gallant but ultimately incomplete shootout loss to the Bruins. And then we had the saving face near comeback but too little too late loss to the Habs, which we all saw coming. And each one of these has so much going on before it, after it, that I mean, we'd be here for 4 hours talking about all of them. So We're going to talk about them individually at some point, but right now I just want to kind of look at the Islanders at 30, at the 30 game mark. So we're roughly a third of the way through the season so far. And you know, we play this game a lot, but I think it's worth saying right now, if I had told you before the season that at the 30 game mark, the Islanders would be in third place in the Metro, 1 point out of second, and with points in 14 out of their last 16 games, I think you and me and just about everybody else would say, okay, sounds good. I'll take it. You know, sign me up. It's, and we talked about this a little bit last week, it's how they've accumulated those 14 points in 16 game, or points in 14 out of 16 games, and the way that they have gone about this season to get to this third place, almost second place in the Metro, that is what gives one pause and what gives one anxiety, like you're talking about. And so, like, you know, we're going to talk a lot more Leafs in the second half. We still have fuel in that tank, so we'll get into that. But, like, the Leafs game was really kind of a perfect example. Like, for the most part, I thought the Islanders played really well. I mean, the Islanders, they dominated the first period. They were up 2-1, looked like they were going to blow the Leafs out of the building, and then the second period was all Leafs. From the moment Kyle Palmieri made it 3-1 to the end of the period, it was basically all Leafs the entire time. The Islanders just kept dumping things out, dumping the puck out, not pushing, not doing anything. They tied it with 6 seconds to go, and of course it was point number 1,000 for John Tavares, and the booing and the scoreboard thing came up. You all know about it by now. Again, we'll get to it in a little bit. But then Barzal and Horvat win it on a beautiful 2-on-1 in overtime. And on one hand, you're like, that was great. That was awesome. And even Elliot Friedman was like, wow, that was a terrific game. But on the other hand, you're like, did we really need to just mail in that second period? And like, why were we dumping the puck out without any sort of structure or offensive push at all while the Leafs were just coming in waves? Like, I don't understand. And it's very, very indicative of this entire season is like the Islanders get points. And they do enough to make you think this team is really good, but then there are parts that just drive you absolutely batty. And you know, the next three games have parts like that too. But like, this game was very indicative of the season, where it's like, okay, great, I'm glad they won, but man, how they did it, man, I don't know. Like, I mean, would you say that's accurate? Like, you know, would you feel the same way, that it's just there was so much there that was good, but also so much that was like, this is gross. I don't want to watch this anymore. What are we doing out here?
Yeah, I left that game against the Leafs, like almost, I was surprised with how happy I was with how everything played out. Much more of it in terms of like the theater and the irony and what, like the significance of each moment, a pivotal moment of that game, and like what it means and how it can represent like something in the bigger picture.
You and I differ on this point, but we'll talk about that again in a little
bit. Yeah. And to me, it like almost was too on the nose. But that's kind of, like you said, that's like more existential stuff. So we'll save that for the second half. In terms of like the on ice in that game, I thought that they were playing so well for so long in that game. Mm. And late game collapses, that was the one I was least upset at, because I thought that if that game had happened on November 3rd, before all of this stuff with the third period collapses became a thing, and maybe that's after, so like let's say October 20th instead, I don't think anyone would be as mad, just because like you watch those last 2 minutes, and the Islanders were, you used the word gallant before. I thought that that's a good word for this too. And they just couldn't win a face-off.
Yeah.
And I'll never get mad at that. It's like frustrating, but I can't get mad at JG Peugeot from my couch while I'm sitting like eating Ben and Jerry's for not winning a face-off. Right. Like, it's just, right, the face-offs are just a coin flip. So I actually thought that game, I was not mad at it at all. Because they won. I mean, I would be a lot, I'm sure this would be a different song had they lost it in overtime. But because I thought that they won, and they deserved, they got the 2 points they deserved. There was so much good to take out of that game, which was Robert Bortuzzo. Was that his second game with them, or first or second game? I think
it was second game.
Yeah, whatever it was. So, but that's the point is they were playing with Mike Riley and Robert Bortuzzo and Sam Bolduc in the lineup in that game. And they held a, and they put forth a they dominated, you could say at times, one of the preseason Stanley Cup favorites and a team with a lot of offensive firepower. So I they got the 2 points and they got to march on to the next game. I just wasn't that mad with how that one went, just because I thought everything looked right. They just didn't that game. If Anders Lee, as he said so many times after games, was just like, we didn't get the bounces tonight, and you know, sometimes that happens, I would be like, this time you're right. Like this time you actually didn't. things kind of just bounced to the wrong way. Mitch Marner like made a diving play to keep a play alive, and that happened. Like it just I wasn't that mad. They got the 2 points.
Yeah, I don't know. I was mad. I wanted them to blow the Leafs out. when they were up 2-1, I wanted the Leafs to go home crying. I wanted them to lose 8-1. I was mad that they got one. Maybe that's a little bit stringent on my part, but I didn't want John Tavares to get any points, let alone two. I wanted people to leave very, very, very disappointed. And then I was like, I was already with the tweet to say, let that son of a bitch get 2 points against the Rangers tomorrow night. And you'll do it. Then you're doing us a favor. Then you're doing something to help me, right? But you know, I think I've seen this so many times that I didn't like seeing it. I almost didn't watch the game at all because I hate the Leafs so much. But you know, that first period had me really super high and encouraged. And then, you know, it's not even that. I hate the phrase defensive shell, because that's not what the Islanders were doing at this moment. They were literally just dumping the puck out as if they were up by 2 goals with 5 minutes left in the game, except they were up by 2 goals and there was 35 minutes left in the game. And I was like, that's not cool. You can't do that. And then, you know, somebody took a dumb penalty. I think it's not, I don't know. That's the Boston game. We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, I thought Horvat, Lee and Barzal were really good. They deserved a goal. I was happy for them that they got the overtime goal. I'm happy when Bo does stuff, because I feel like that's kind of sticking it to Canadian media a little bit too. So there was stuff I liked about it, but you know, my note here is that Samsonov barely had any work for 2 periods. Like it's just,
he had 27. He was broken too. Like the second period he did, but like that third period, I think they were, until the Leafs pulled their goalie, they were like 7 total shots.
For the
Islanders and 3 for the Leafs.
Yeah, right.
So that third period didn't fly by any, like it felt like it went on for ages, but
yeah,
I'm sure that if people without skin in the game were like, wow, this period has flown, because it's just, there was nothing going on for so long.
Yeah.
And the whole time it just felt like it was going to happen. Like we all knew this was going to happen. I think that's part of why I, wasn't as pissed off maybe, but we'll have that discussion later.
You're a smarter man than I am, but Samsonov had 27 saves and I'm pretty sure he had 18 of them in the first period or something like that. So anyway, but you know, hey, listen, it's a crazy game, crazy circumstances, everything going into it, everything happening during it and after it, and all the blah blah blah, the dad's trip and blah, was Mitch Marner's dad smiling enough when Tavares scored? It's a whole big thing. I can't even get into it, but you know, you thought, okay, the next team on the schedule are the Anaheim Ducks, losers of 100 or whatever in a row. They had their short, you know, hot streak a while back that is long dead. And these guys, they're without Zegras. They're without Drysdale. They're without all these guys. The Islanders should theoretically, like, obliterate these guys, or at least win considerably comfortably. But as we've learned through these first 30 games, the Islanders don't do anything comfortably. And here, again, they were up 2-0, things are looking great. All of a sudden, see, this to me is where I think they was the most unlucky, more unlucky than the Leafs game, because Troy Terry scores a power play goal that literally fell off of Bortuzzo's skate. Somebody's stick breaks, the rebound goes to Adam Henrique, who ties it. You know, the Islanders, again, not pushing. And so, like, just 2 bad breaks. Varlamov was great, but 2 bad breaks and ends up in the back of the net. And all of a sudden, the Ducks go up 3-2 early in the third period on a 2-on-1. Not a great goal by Varlamov, but what are you going to do? And then the Islanders decide to keep playing. So then Barzal scores. They're trading chances back and forth. Bortuzzo takes a terrible penalty with 1:45 to go. And you think, come on, guys, like, we're going to really lose this game on a power play goal against with 1:45 to go. Really, you're going to do this? But lo, the story flipped 100%, you know, 180%, because Simon Holmstrom scores the shorthanded game winner The Ducks, again, the Islanders can't win a faceoff. The Ducks get two chances with the empty net, but ends up being 4-3 Islanders. So, like, this game against two teams who barely see each other had a lot going on. And, oh, by the way, I didn't even mention that this was Ross Johnston's return game. He got the tearful video. He was, you know, waving at the crowd. They're giving him 2 days after people yelled at Islanders fans for not giving John Tavares a golf clap after booing him for 6 years. People are on their feet for Ross Johnston. You know, the Islanders are on their feet for Ross Johnston. He's waving at them. And so it was kind of a fun moment. He seemed to be tearing up a little bit. And I think everybody had a good time. And this was one where I was like, you know, I think it ended up being, you know, the right score, and I'm glad they won. This to me was a little more bad luck than the Leafs game. But when I thought they were going to lose this to this team, I was already beside myself with anger. And thank you to Simon Holmstrom for talking me and pulling me really off the ledge. Because if they lost that game on a power play goal, I don't know if I would have ever forgiven them. But this Holmstrom is really something. And he almost had another couple of goals. We're going to talk about the Boston game in a second, but he's been really, really good. And, you know, he's almost one of the Islanders' most important players through that, this 14, you know, points in 14 out of 16 stretch, because he just keeps coming up huge in shorthanded situations when the Islanders still cannot kill a penalty to save their lives. And this is another thing that's driving me nuts. What happened to this team's penalty kill? What happened to it? All they're doing is standing around. I think that they're like, I'm not a coach or anything, but it feels like they're kind of rushing to get to a spot as opposed to, you know, kind of reading the play and reacting accordingly. They're just kind of rushing to get to a spot. And I think the other team knows that spot and is just kind of, you know, moving the puck and scoring around them. But this game, again, was a near disaster. Turned out to be okay. You know, the Ducks are in one of those modes where, like, you know, this is just shit's going to happen to you when you're you know, losing X amount of games in a row. Were you at this game, or did you not make this one?
No, I was at the Bruins.
Yeah.
This one. This it felt all night like this was the cliche, just not our night.
Trap game. Yep.
Just not going to be our night. Bounce is going against us, and that goal by Barzal on the power play.
Right.
How long have we said that we'll watch other teams play hockey and we'll just say it's looks like a completely different sport. Just a complete how the Oilers are playing. That looks like a completely different sport compared to what the Islanders play. And the Islanders are playing rugby on ice, and the, you know, these other teams are just pinging the puck around. And now I'm starting to think the Islanders are one of those teams that other fan bases are watching and saying, this looks like a different sport compared to what we play. And
pretty much.
Yeah, it's there's definitely some good and bad to that. This every fiber of my being thought that this was going to be a moral victory loss. They played well, you can't fault them, but they lost. And that was why it was so cathartic when Simon Holmstrom scored, because you already make that deal with the devil. And once Bortuzzo took that penalty, I was like, yep, here it comes. You know, this is going to be a backbreaker. But this Holmstrom guy, man. I think that if there were, you know, the Islanders were a big market team, and they had, let's say, you know, three assigned beat writers at The Athletic, and then another, you know, two or three at Sportsnet, and another couple at the Hockey News, and one at Sports Illustrated, and one at the Toronto Star, you know, if they were one of those teams, every single writer this week for their Sunday morning column would have tried to write about Simon Holmstrom.
Yeah.
Oh, because that's a kind of that goal was the peak of something that was bubbling. And I think to his credit, I think Arthur Staple last week wrote about Holmstrom and just like I think that the quote that he used to tease the article was from another an AHL coach source that said, or former AHL coach that was like, wait, Simon Holmstrom leads the NHL in shorthanded goals? That guy never stood out to me in the AHL once. And that's kind of what's the best part of the story is nobody saw this coming.
Right.
I don't think I think the most positive Islander fan you would have talked to early before the season started the most positive Holmstrom stan would have said, I could see him getting to like 8 goals, 15 assists, being a good penalty killer and a solid checking line forward. So this is exceeding everybody's expectations. I think there's three players or maybe four players exceeding everyone's expectations relative to where they were in opening night. That's Dobson, Barzal, Romanov, and Holmstrom. And I think Holmstrom's the one who's doing it by the most.
Oh, yeah.
It's like not even close. And we were like trying to parallel him to other Islanders because the shorthanded goals, people are like, oh, it's like Grabner. And then you and I were talking on the mailbag episode, about Bates and Pekka almost. He's his own thing now. This isn't something I've ever seen. My friend Mike calls him Sasha Barkov Jr. And he's not wrong. Like, he's such a good defensive forward. He's lanky. He's got great hands, which I knew he had a decent shot, but the hands in tight are something like, come on. Right. But yeah, this game kind of became two different stories. One, the Islanders find a way to win in a game that they look a sure thing to come up as a valiant effort in defeat, feel good loss. And then the other story being Holmstrom's being one of the most heroic players of the season to date. So while I was so sure of how I felt about that Maple Leafs game is the second it ended, this one took a little bit of time to get through because it's like, man, that thing was too close for comfort on so many levels. And, you know, this is the one they needed. This is the one you needed to have in this week of games. And but then as we got further away from the end of the game, I just started to appreciate that they found a way to win. And that's all I've been asking for this team to do of late, because they're still missing Adam Pellick, Ryan Pulock, and now for this game, Scott Mayfield is out. So like, this is a team that isn't, nobody's saying it because they have, they've made a couple acquisitions and the team just doesn't get covered like that. But this is a team that is absolutely decimated on the blue line right now. Just decimated.
Well, the only team that's truly dealing with injuries is the Maple Leafs, as we all know. Theirs are the only injuries that matter. And nobody else is really dealing with any injuries except the Islanders. Most definitely are, to three super important players, and two in particular. The other thing about Holmstrom that I've loved is everything you said is 100% true. I don't know, you know, who else thought he was going to come this far at this point, but I could tell you who didn't think that, and it's Andy and Rono, who are on Twitter, a couple of stats guys, and their incomplete stats card on Simon Holmstrom is totally hilarious. They've decided he stinks, even though most of the fields aren't filled out, which is absolutely uproariously funny. But no, he's got 9 goals, 4 shorties already, and that's crazy. I mean, this guy's got 9 goals, 29 games into the season. Like, if he finishes with 20, that's insane. And, you know, I mean, he might score another 4 shorthanded goals with 8 shorty, because, like, that's totally doable and totally, like, where did this guy come from? And, you know, to me, I don't know if anybody else feels this way, but I remember when they drafted him a couple of years ago, and he was a project. And that was the idea. He's a reach. Yes. He, you know, it was kind of like one of those who moments, you know, when they drafted him. But I just thought, okay, well, he'll be ready when he's ready, or he'll just, you know, leave and go play for, you know, the Berlin Ice Bears or whatever at some point. But here he is, and he's doing a great job. And his pairing with JG Pageau has really been great for both guys, because Pageau, again, he's not quite the offensive force that he still was. But, you know, if Holmstrom with that shot can be the trigger man, and Pageau can do all the heady, smart things that he normally does, well, that's a pretty lethal pairing right there. And then, you know, right now, Julian Gauthier is on the other side. We're going to talk a lot about him in a second. Oliver Wahlstrom used to be there, but you know, we don't know what's going on with him. But yeah, this was a game that they tried very hard to lose, it seemed. But Holmstrom was like, nah, we're not going to lose this. And so it was a good one. You know, when one team's winning and one team's losing, this is the kind of stuff that happens. So I'm sure the Ducks were.
Yep. We've been on that side.
Oh, tell me about
Ducks,
it. Yeah.
The Ducks side. I was trying to figure out, like, I've seen this exact game before where the Islanders, I think I feel like it was against the Flyers, and just please to get out of that one with 2 points, because that just meant right away that okay, this is, no matter what happens in Boston,
yeah,
And the fact that there was the back to back on the other half of the on the yep. other side of that Boston game kind of changes this a little bit. But when you looked at that Boston game, you said, no matter what happens against Boston, we're having this has been a wholly successful homestand.
Definitely, definitely. And boy, did a lot of stuff happen against Boston. Yeah. 5-4 Bruins in the shootout. Amazingly, that game was 0-0 after one. And the Islanders had an edge. Like they were might have been the better team in that period. But then, man, all kinds of crazy stuff happened. They went up 2-0. Romanov scored, which doesn't happen that often. Then Holmstrom again on 2-on-1 with Pageau. It was 2-0. Islanders were cruising. And immediately on the very next shift after that 2-0 goal, Julien Gauthier takes a penalty. And this is when the whole thing fell apart. Holmstrom had a chance to score again. Linus Ullmark, who was fantastic in this game, got just the tip of his skate blade on it. Immediately back the other way, Morgan Geeky scores. The Islanders take another penalty. David Pastrnak scores. Now we're tied. They open up the third period. Horvat makes it 3-2. Marchand's goal gets waved off. JVR scores to tie the game, again on the power play. Nelson scores a power play goal. Then Gauthier gets he gets tripped. No call. Mason Lauri just shovels the puck towards the net, bounces off of something or someone, ends up squeezing through Ilya Sorokin's pads. We're tied at 4. David Pastrnak gets called for a trip late in the game. He wasn't happy about it, but it was a makeup call, frankly. The Islanders' power play in overtime was terrible. It's way too stationary. Everybody's standing around, did not do anything. Chances on both ends, but Coyle and Pastrnak score in the shootout. Holmstrom, again, this isn't going to show up on any official score sheet, but hopefully you saw the video of his absolutely sick, disgusting, incredible, nasty shootout goal. If he does stuff like that in real games, man, this guy is really going to be a superstar. But, you know, I thought in this game, given the circumstances, given the opponent, given the injuries, I was happy that they pulled this out, although going 0-for-3 on the PK sucks. Ullmark, being fantastic is what's going to happen. Again, Holmstrom had a chance there to score. And it was very similar, I thought, to the Leafs game in the sense that like a little bit more structure and a little bit more juice and a little bit more push and aggression really would have helped. But that said, I thought the Islanders played really well in this game, as long as they weren't trying to kill a penalty. That was really the only thing there. You were there. It was your dad's birthday. Your wife was the Bruins fan, was at home. So you guys can sit and enjoy. And this was probably a fun one to watch. This felt like a playoff game to me, sitting at home. Did it feel that way in the arena?
Yeah, I thought. And the crowd was great.
Yes.
Bruins fans obviously travel pretty well. So that was part of it. And the Islanders just were so impressive in this for so much of this game, much of the game. And they looked, it looked like they were just about to break the Bruins spirits after that second goal.
Yeah.
And then, the Gauthier penalty,
man, dude,
it's just so, it's so, I think that like the discourse among Islander fans with so many different subjects is it's just so tiring because not like it's fine to have, it's fun to have discussions like this. But when it's, when it becomes so polarizing that like, if you're either Varlamov should be the starting goalie guy or Sorokin should be the starting goalie guy, like right now, or who should play on first line wing and what do we think about you either believe or don't believe in Julien Gauthier. And there's like a distinct aisle when, You can just think what you want, but with the way that this guy, his career has gone, you're just seeing a microcosm of it with what he's doing. There's so much to like about him as a player, his speed and size. He's got a decent shot. He can force the issue on the ice really well.
He seems to outrace other players with very little effort.
Yeah.
Like he's putting in 3 strides and they're putting in twice as many and he's ahead of them down the ice.
He's like a weird mix between Anders Lee and Pierre Engvall. A great skater, incredible skater and gigantic and strong.
Right.
And you it makes sense because you think, oh, well, this guy was a mid-round pick in the first round for the Hurricanes in 2016. and has turned into a journeyman because he ices the puck 10 feet before the red line without any pressure, or he takes these penalties. He's just the hockey IQ has not caught up to the legs. And I think that's part of the reason the Islanders signed him to a 2-year deal, which is we'll give this guy a legitimate shot here. Well, there's the toolkit is like too tempting, but you're gonna see stuff like this, and that's why he's not going to play 70 games in the NHL season. Him and Wahlstrom are the Spider-Man meme at this point. They're very different players in what they do, but you're like, okay, you sit him for 10 games. He comes in motivated, plays a great game, scores a beautiful goal, right, clutch goal. You give him the 4 or 5 game runway, dumb penalty, bad icing, blown defensive assignment, whatever you want. And next, the other guy's turn. And it's just like, it's not like it's changed yet. I think he's been much more good than bad, but that penalty, every Islander fan in the building, like, you could even hear people saying it, like, that's the worst thing that could have happened just right then. Like, so the building is rolling.
Yeah.
And now we get to watch David Pastrnak just line up for one-timers for the next 2 minutes against the league's worst power play, a penalty kill.
This penalty kill is real. And I got to say, we spent a lot of time in the first, 30 games or 20 games a season calling for the head of the power play coach. I mean, do we need to start doing this for the penalty kill coach? Was that Doug Huda? Like, what the hell is going on? It's incredible to me that this team can't have both things working at the same time. Like, all those years, they had a great penalty kill. You were excited when they killed penalties because they were so aggressive and they were so good at it. And, there was a chance that a Pageau or somebody was going to score a shorthanded goal. But their power play was mediocre at best, mostly worse than that. But, it was good enough to get by. Now, all of a sudden, they've got a really, really good power play. All credit to them. They've changed the power play, but their penalty kill is a disaster. And that's almost worse. I was thinking about this, and I don't know if people are going to agree. I'd almost rather go back to the days when their power play couldn't score a damn goal. Like, I'd rather have a working penalty kill than a power play. Like, you can get by scoring goals at 5-on-5, but, like, if you can't kill a penalty in this league, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I don't know how many times, because it's going to happen in the playoffs, and you might see a David Pastrnak on the power play in the playoffs, and you better hope that you can stop it, because we've seen that too. 2013, jumps to mind. Like, it's really, really frustrating, and I hate it. And, like, again, against Boston, and we'll talk about, the Montreal game, which is a different kind of disaster in a second. You put a team like that on the power. I don't care who's hurt. I mean, Zacha was hurt. Can you imagine if Zacha and McAvoy were in the game? They might have scored 5 power play goals in 3 chances. Like, I don't know. It's insane. But it's crazy. Like, what are these guys doing? I don't understand. And somebody brought up a point. I don't know even where I saw, but, like, might have been in our group chat. Somebody was like, why don't they just start Pageau and Holmstrom on the penalty kill? Why does it always have to be Cizikas and Clutterbuck? I don't understand. Like, not that I'm blaming them, but, like, try something, anything, please. This isn't working.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think, this is something we talked about with the power play last year, which was okay. It might not be the by the book answer to throw Sebastian Aho up there with the first group and like substitute out Lee for Palmieri or whatever, but what you're doing isn't working. So let's try the other way. And if it doesn't work, well, what's worse? Like, it's going to get worse than where we're at. So yeah, something needs to change about that. And it's so demoralizing because, like that penalty, this is going to end up in the back of the net. You can essentially just book it that it's 2-1 Bruins.
Right.
Cause that's that team's. And you brought up the playoffs. You think about a lot of these playoff teams, they're so clinical and they just know exactly when the right time to raise their game is. And the Bruins are one of those teams that, like, all right, well, this is the big power play. This is the one that can change the game. And it did. And, then they get another one, and Holmstrom, that play was just absolutely nuts. And Andy Brickley on the Bruins broadcast, I saw a clip, was like, now turn that save into a goal. And I can promise you, Andy, that everybody in UBS Arena said, as soon as that puck didn't go in for Holmstrom, this is 2-2.
Yeah.
This is just 2-2. And that just from that point on in the game that the script was just torn to shreds. It went sideways, right. 100 different directions that game. And right before that tripping non-call on Gauthier, I was like, man, the refs have been pretty good tonight. I said that out loud. Because I thought that they were. I thought the Marchand goal was a no goal. I thought that even the fashion callback was the right decision. They thought that they kind of read the situation well with how this game was flying and flowing, and there's a lot of back and forth, and they let everyone kind of get away with the same thing. And then that missed call. What was so frustrating about it was just it looks, I feel like the ref was just like, this is pretty harmless. The puck's in the corner here.
Right.
Like, I know the Bruins are keeping the play alive, so I'll just let this one go rather than kill the game here. And then, off of Sorokin from behind the goal line. And
yeah, that was brutal.
Whatever. It was a crazy game, one that I left thinking if Islanders just went 4-0-2 on the homestand, that's, out of 12 possible points, they get 10. I think that if that was basically what I thought would be like the best possible scenario, was get 10 out of 12 points. They played really well against two playoff teams in the Leafs and the Bruins. I know that the Bruins are banged up, but Adam Pellick hasn't played for the Islanders at all for the season.
The club.
I saw people tweeting about like the Penguins struggles. Not people, I should say, a particular season previewer and chart dictator at the Athletic, blaming injuries for the Penguins. And the Penguins are missing Noel Achari and Matt Nieto and Brian Rust for a little bit here. Like, the Islanders have not played a game with their opening day defense core, I don't think, since opening night, like a full game. So this team has been banged up. They just gutted their way to a homestand where it looked like for a second they were going to fold because of the way it started. They somehow haven't yet, because of what happened the next night, the Islanders have yet to have they've had one run-of-the-mill win, and they've had, I think, two run-of-the-mill losses this season out of 30 games. 10% of their games have been run-of-the-mill. The losses I would consider the Capitals loss, that 4-1, just a kind of ho-hum, whatever. And then the Sabres loss, where they're on the second night of a back-to-back, right, after they played a crazy game against the Devils at home. Those have been the only three straightforward games, win or lose, for the Islanders this season. And somehow they are sitting here with the creepiest looking record I've ever seen overall, 14-8-8. And
it's insane.
So leaving that game against the Bruins, like, you knew in your deep down that the Islanders were going to lose in Montreal. So I was already thinking of it, of that performance against the Bruins with that context. And I still was like, you can't be disappointed with this way things have gone. Homestand in the back of your mind is the angel and devil kind of situation. And the devil saying, yeah, but they also, blew these points and these points and these points and these points and these points. And they're not in the clear here. And you're like, I know, but I'm looking at how they have been playing. And, even knowing that they're going to lose tomorrow in Montreal, I'm looking at it and I'm trying my best to just keep my hopes up that this is the real team.
Yeah. Yeah. 4-0-2 in a 6-game homestand is fine. That's good. Like, that's kind of the record that you want. You got points in every game. That's great. But you did lose the last two. And we finally at the point where we talk about the loss in Montreal, and lose they did. One thing about the Bruins game too, is like, for whatever fault the Islanders had, particularly on their penalty kill, it certainly wasn't from a lack of trying. Like, they put in a really, really good effort and came up just a goal short in the shootout. It was a good game aside from the penalty kill. It wasn't like they weren't trying out there on the penalty kill. It's just the penalty kill stinks right now. In their 5-3 loss in Montreal, you did wonder what anybody was thinking for the first 40 minutes, because it was 4-0 Habs after that 40. It was, again, it was nothing after one, but I mean, that was all Varlamov's doing, because the Islanders didn't even show up. They didn't show up in the second period. In fact, might have been even worse. And all of a sudden it's 4-0, and Josh Anderson went 17 games without a goal. People were like, you know, lighting candles for him in churches all across Quebec. And he gets two goals, of course, because why wouldn't he against the Islanders? And, you know, the worst part about this game, I think, was the sort of impotent feeling I had, because I have a lot of friends who are Habs fans. I follow them on Twitter, and like, they're having a great time. They're feeling good. The team is not good this year, and they really wanted this win. It's hockey night in Canada. They were looking forward to it. It's a beatdown, and we haven't seen a beatdown like this in a long. This is the kind of game we thought the Islanders were going to play against Anaheim. It didn't happen, and so like, they're feeling so good, and I didn't really have the heart to tell them, or I didn't have the energy to just be like, dude, did you watch the game that these guys played last night at home against the Bruins? Are you kidding me? That was like a playoff game, and now they're showing up here. I mean, now that being said, we've seen the Islanders play back-to-back games before, and I've never seen them play like this. This was really something terrible, and they did manage to save a little bit of face. They scored three goals. It was 4-3 with about 6 minutes to go after Bo Horvat scored. Brock Nelson had two goals, so hopefully people up there can be like, wow, this guy, Brock Nelson guy, is pretty good, but Christian Dvorak scored an empty net goal. So, like, the third period was all Islanders, but by that point it was too little too late. I don't know if I'd blame Varlamov at all for this one. You know, I don't mind that they lost, because again, I kind of felt it coming. But again, to get back to our original point of all this, you know, wrapping up after 30 games, the way they lost really, really bugged me. Like, you know, if you're going to lose, okay. I mean, I get it. I'm not crazy, but to basically not show up for two periods and not do anything against a team that's not very good at all, and then just kind of, you know, try and put something together, make the score look a lot nicer in the third, just isn't going to cut. I mean, maybe they thought they could come back, but I don't know. The other notable thing about this game is that Butch Goring kept calling Habs goalie Sam Montembeau Montalban, which I find endlessly hilarious as well. I don't know if he was watching Fantasy Island or Star Trek 2 in the hotel room before coming to the game, but I lost track of Montalban's after a while. I think he just kind of ignored it, because I think even he knew that Montalban was wrong, but I do appreciate the tribute to the late, great Ricardo Montalban, but it is Montembeau. So there you go. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about this. They didn't show up for 40 minutes and then made the score look okay at the end of it. But, you know, again, I don't mind that they lost, but that was not, I didn't want to watch that on my Saturday night. Get out of here with that.
Yeah, that was tough. And you thought that the Islanders, after that first period and Varlamov was great in the first, that they'd come out, be like, okay, like, we had our 20 minute dud. Now we're here, and
yeah,
they found a way to play worse in the second, which that was the thing that bugged me. I barely checked in the third, and I found because the Islanders had scored without me watching, I was like, I'm not gonna watch. I'm just gonna, you know, I'll wait to see and hope that I get the good notification here. And they don't, of course. They give up an empty netter, which I truly think that the craziest, the Islanders are riddled with crazy stats from this season. Whether it's the penalty kill being so bad, the Holmstrom leading the NHL in shorthanded goals despite the penalty kill being terrible, the 11 overtime games, the third period blown leads, all this stuff. But the fact that they still haven't scored an empty net goal, to
man,
me, is insane.
Yeah.
Still the only team. They've been the only team now for weeks.
It's crazy.
So it's crazy, the what's going on here. They've scored zero empty net goals. And they've allowed four now. 6-on-5 goals for the other team. So I want to say that they haven't they've scored they've scored 1 6-on-5 goal, and they've allowed 6 empty netters. So they're it's crazy. But the only thing that mattered to me in this game was wanted to get the core guys in and out of Montreal in one piece, and now we got to wait till tomorrow morning to see what's going on with Horvat, because the fact that nobody noticed it was really annoying, because I just went and checked Twitter after the game and saw a couple people just like on your For You page being like, what happened with Horvat? Did anyone see? Can someone show me the video? Because none of the beat writers said anything. And I guess the broadcast might not have picked up on it right away. Mm. But finally, it came out like, oh, there's no update on him. And it was so innocuous. And
yeah, he just kind of fell.
Yeah.
Just on his, like, almost like a push-up position and came
and
up.
There was
kind
a video of him, like,
wrist.
Skating off at the end of the game. But he's skating off at the end of a hockey game. Like, he just lost the hockey game. So he could look disappointed.
Yeah.
A lot of my well-being for the holiday season hinges on Bo Horvat's those little bones in his wrist and hand, which is really tells you what the absurdity of being a sports fan and more specifically an Islander fan is like. Yeah. Because if I wake up to bad news or bad update about Horvat tomorrow, my Christmas is ruined.
Definitely. So, let's assume that Bo is okay. Hopefully, keep our fingers crossed that he's okay. And, you know, I'll get back to the original question that we posed 45 or so minutes ago. Third place in the Metro, 1 point behind second place, 14-8-8, a crazy record, although not nearly as crazy as 8-7-6, which they were for a little while there too. A lot of good, including Bo Horvat, who might be hurt, but he might also, you know, join the list of injured people, including Adam Pellick, Ryan Pulock, Scott Mayfield. They've made a couple of good pickups in Mike Riley and Robert Bortuzzo, who've played, you know, fairly well. I'm not going to hold that goal in the Anaheim game against Bortuzzo, I guess, although he did take that dumb penalty too. I think I'm with you. Like, there's a lot to like about this team, and I think that's what makes this season, again, so frustrating. We talked about this last week. Like, they could be so much more if they just stopped with the little stupid bullshit things that they do, asshole things, if you will, that they do. I mean, they've given up 40 goals in the third period to their opponents this season. 40. They've only scored 29. You know, like you said, they've not scored an empty net goal. Their penalty kill is amongst the worst in the league. This is stuff that I think can be fixed. And I, you know, would think that this team knows that. But until they fix it, it's not going to be an easy ride, and we're going to be stuck here hoping that, you know, this guy comes back or this game can work out, because we're going to talk on the other side about the upcoming games, and they're all in division and they all are going to not be easy. So, they're not all in division. There's one more there, but, you know, I guess, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what else to say. Islanders at 30. How are we, you know, is there a way to sum it up? Again, you know, has talking this out alleviated any anxiety whatsoever, or is it still all about Bo and these next couple of games coming up?
Yeah, I think it's kind of left me in the same place, because so much of it is positive.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, right? There is legitimately a lot to lose here. This team has what it takes that you look for in a Stanley Cup contender. Just nobody notices it yet. Like, Noah Dobson. When I think it's so funny. You go through the checklist that a lot of NHL pundits look for when they say, oh, I size up my Stanley Cup contenders. Like, they need to meet this criteria. Do they have a number one center? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have a number one, like a Norris level number one defenseman, like Alex Pietrangelo?
Mm.
Yes. Do they have good goaltending?
Mm.
Yes. Do they have do they have good depth?
Yeah.
Yes. Like you go through this list. Like, is the special teams? How's their special team? Well, complicated.
But one of them's good.
Yeah, you go through the list and you're just like, yep. Oh god. Like, if you think about the Islanders, like,
right,
they hit every one of those notes. They hit every one of those notes, and there's room for improvement in a couple areas. Dobson has been spectacular.
Yes.
And him and Romanov have been awesome together as a first pair. He could still get better. This is a 20, they both could, right? They're 23 years old. The both of them, like, they could get better. Horvat and Barzal, this is their first season together. They could get better. Brock Nelson is incredible still. Like, this, like, there's a chance he could get better. Like, this is you assume that Sorokin, you can feel safe saying that he'll probably have a better second half than first half when we get there, or better. He's been great, but there, I think he can get better. Like, there, the penalty kill, well, it can get better. So there are so many. My brother actually put it this way, and he's right. Like, this Islanders team has so many more dimensions to it than previous versions. They can beat you. They can outscore you, finally. They can beat you with their power play, the goaltending. Like, they've got the star power that can just win a game on its own, like Barzal and Horvat did kind of against the Hurricanes. Like, this is a team that can actually beat you in a number of ways rather than the plan A or plan A, like, method of when they were really good under Trotz. And they're still, like, 50-50 to make the playoffs. So all this stuff is going great.
Right.
But they just can't make it easy on us. And that's why I just don't want to be sitting there like on April 10th and be like, oh, God, this team, you know, you're not going to believe me, random Flyers fans that I meet on the street. But this Islander team could have won the Stanley Cup if they got into the playoffs. Because that's the thing I'm thinking here. It's like, they could win the Stanley Cup or they can miss the playoffs. Like, it's scary stuff.
When you put it that way, it's brutal. It's like a punch in the heart. Oh, my God. All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to take a breath. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the next couple of games. We're going to talk about a game that happened tonight. And then we're going to, talk about the Leafs for a little bit more, I promise. But we're going to take a couple of weeks off, and I'll explain in a minute. So meet us on the other side. So the Islanders have three games this week, one less than they had last week. Tuesday night versus the Edmonton Oilers, this time at home. Their last game in Edmonton did not go well. I'm sure you all remember that. And then the very next night, they are at home against Washington. We're going to talk about the Caps again in a second. Both of those games are national, I believe. I guess ESPN Plus. The 20th is on TNT. So good luck with that. You know, it's not great having another back-to-back, but they do have 2 days off, so hopefully it's okay. Hopefully their back-to-back on the 20th goes better than the one that they just had in Montreal. But they are home for both of these, so hopefully that helps. And then Saturday, they are in Raleigh against the Hurricanes. Again, not a great place to have played so far, although they did win there recently. And then they're off for Christmas, and we'll talk about that in a second, too. These are two division games, and ironically enough, the Caps and Hurricanes played tonight, of course, because, again, the Islanders can never get anything easily. They went to overtime, they went to a shootout, and the Caps won. So it's right now, it's the Islanders in third in the Metro with 36 points, the Hurricanes right behind them in the first wildcard spot with 35 points, and the Caps right behind them in the second wildcard spot with 34 points. The Red Wings also have 34, but they have two more games played. The Devils have 33. They're actually playing right now, so they might jump over the Caps and jump in, depending on how that works out. So, as Mike was saying, you know, the Islanders are in the fight. Everything's bunched up right now. It's a tough to really call who's gonna, you know, make the playoffs. Any one of these teams could miss. Any of them could make it. But these three games here represent pretty tall orders. Again, the Oilers got really hot. I think they lost a couple of games. I would think that the Islanders would be in a better position to beat them this time than they were when they went to Edmonton. They had just fired their coach. Chris Knobloch took over. And then the Caps, you know, the last time, the Islanders have two games against the Caps already, and one went well and the other one didn't. So hopefully, you know, we can get a little bit more of the former, although that one, the Islanders did not play well, and Semyon Varlamov just straight up stole that game. And then in Carolina, they also didn't play well, but again, stole it in overtime. So, you know, this is a chance for the Islanders to right some of these question marks that we've been talking about this whole time, and no better time against, division opponents. But that being said, we've got 30 games of evidence that say that they probably won't, and there'll probably be just some assholery going on in these games, too. How do you see these three playing out? We got one Western Conference team that, you know, in a lot of cases, sometimes there's a lot less pressure, but then you got two division opponents that are literally right behind you. In fact, who knows where they might be when these games happen, but like, how do you see these three playing out just the week before Christmas?
Yeah, I'm just, the schedule's eating me up a little bit.
Yeah, sucks.
You make the Islanders go travel on the back-to-back and then make them go do it again. And I get traveling from Long Island to Montreal, then Long Island to Washington is nothing, but the other teams are rested. I don't know if the Capitals even play between tonight and that game. I don't think they do. I don't think they play between now and Wednesday. It's a little frustrating in that regard, but you can't. You can be frustrated at it, but it's not like it's going to change. So it's this Oilers game is a really tricky one to size up. Because now you're looking at, okay, we've the Islanders just had a stretch where they got points in 15 of 16 or 14 of 15, whatever it was. They had a four-game winning streak going. They had a six-game point streak going. It all ended in Montreal. Now, if they lose to Edmonton, we're looking at a three-game losing streak going into a really tough two-step.
That's true.
With divisional opponents. So, like, the pressure really gets amped up. You beat that Oilers team, which is still very beatable. You beat that team. Without Horvat, it becomes really scary because you'd think that having Horvat, Nelson, Pageau, Cizikas down the middle really gives the Islanders a chance against the McDavid Draisaitl 1-2 punch. And so, but if you do win that game, it takes some of the sting out of the Washington Carolina ways to end the week. But if I hate to say it. But if they lose to Edmonton, the Islanders, that game against Washington becomes a, if you don't want the Carolina game to win a must win to be a must win, this is a must win, right? Because what looms on the other side of Christmas is then Pittsburgh, Washington, Pittsburgh. So it's not a gauntlet in terms of the opponents being tough. The Islanders are better than Washington. I think that they're better than Pittsburgh right now. Mm. The Hurricanes are struggling. The Hurricanes are better than the Islanders, but they're not as much better as everyone thought they were.
I was going to say, are they though? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's definitely much more questionable now, sure. But this is, so it's terrifying stuff because I don't want to be sounding the panic alarm on the other side of Christmas here. And there's a chance that we are after a fortnight of good feelings.
Right. Yeah. You bring up a good point too. Like, I'm looking at these three teams and I'm like, the Islanders can beat these three teams. Like, and I'm not trying to say that like they're world beaters. I'm not saying that at all, but like they have better goaltending and better depth than the Oilers do. They have better high-end firepower than the Capitals do. Go figure, right? Because Ovechkin, he isn't quite looking at himself these days anymore, and obviously Backstrom isn't there anymore. And they score more than the Hurricanes do, and they have better goaltending than the Hurricanes do. So, like, I'm looking at three teams that the Islanders can and should beat, and yet if they lost all three, it wouldn't be surprising because that's the way this team rolls. I don't want them to. I'm certainly not saying that I expect them to, but you know, this is what makes, again, I feel like a broken record. Like, this team can and should be much better than it is. It has the talent to do this, even with those three guys we talked about being hurt, Pelech, Pulock, and Mayfield. It can still beat these teams. You know, I mean, you've got two guys having career years in Dobson and Romanov, and a guy who fits like a glove in Riley. And it's just like, I don't understand. And some two other guys who are pretty good, and just Bortuzzo and Aho. Like, I don't, and Sam Bolduc, unfortunately, there. You know, like, is one guy who doesn't really know what he's doing on defense enough to like lose all three of these? I don't think so. You know, it's all the problems with the Islanders have are all systematic. It's all, you know, just execution, of which they do none. And in the words of Tampa Bay Bucks coach John McKay, when somebody asked him what he thought of his team's execution, he said, "I'm all for it." Like, that's the way I feel. Like, it's just sometimes I'm all for it. That's the way I feel about this team's execution. So, they can beat these three teams, but they need to fix their penalty kill, at least, you know, get some semblance of a penalty kill going and just stop giving away whole periods and stop just taking a whole period or half a period off and, you know, you'd be okay. And I think they'll be all right. But again, I have no hope that's going to happen.
And there's it's not just like the on ice stuff that's worrying at all to me. It's also just take a look around and this division. I think everyone was kind of excited. We were a couple points behind the Rangers going into the weekend, and you're like, oh my God, if things go break our way, we could be tied with them on points. And now they're 7 points clear. So you kind of put that one on the back burner and you wake up on Sunday morning and it's second place Flyers, 37 points.
Yep.
Islanders, 36, Hurricanes, 35, Capitals, 34, Devils, 33, and the Devils are in action right now. And the Penguins at 29, which, we'll talk about in a little bit. So like 4 points separates second from sixth as we record right now. The Islanders are right in the middle of that, and we know that you can look at it one of two ways, like that they've squandered so many opportunities to be close to the Rangers, or you can say they've had so many things go wrong and they're still at this record. That's impressive, however you want to look at it. But the reality is they're in the thick of a playoff race with two teams right now that you're like, did not expect them to be anywhere near the playoffs, Philadelphia and Washington. And I think that Philadelphia is looking more and more sustainable by the minute, and it's really pissing me off. Washington, I kind of expect to trail off a bit here, because so much of what they're doing is just Charlie Lindgren playing incredible in goal. And the Hurricanes and Devils, it's like the Devils have started to really trend up. They've won 8 of 10. They've gotten Hughes and Heischer back and healthy, all that. And the goaltending has started to be like slightly better. So you'd expect them to kind of just come up, and who knows with Carolina at this point. I'm beyond trying to say that this team is better than their record, because they're just not, maybe. So the teams that we're slugging it out with is this weird mishmash. If you were to ask me what my safest prediction was before game one, it was Islanders and Penguins, and maybe like the Sabres or Senators in like a death battle for one of the last two wild card spots. It wasn't that. Yeah, the Islanders could very well finish second in this division, or they could finish sixth, and it's going to come down to like a bounce or two. Like this is not what I.
What an awful place to be.
Yeah,
Jesus.
Yeah, Christ. it's and this, I think these three games, like that's why it's there. The stakes are so high for three games leading into the Christmas break. I'm sure like most of the players are out right now, you know, going out to dinner and Sunday night and doing that. And we're sitting here like freaking out because that's our job. But no, it's not even our job. That's our hobby. What's your hobby? My hobby is to sit here and have a full blown meltdown on a podcast that's listened to by thousands of people, and talk about the Islanders' upcoming schedule and how it's going to ruin my Christmas.
This reminds me of Mrs. Seinfeld. What are you going scuba diving for? For fun. For fun? This is what we do for fun? We worry about the Islander schedule, but yeah, I don't know, man. I almost want to fast forward to the end of the season to get the Islanders' takes on all this stuff, but we're going to have to wait, and we're just going to have to hope that they can pull, you know, some point. I mean, listen, it's a three-game stretch, so what do we always say? Get 4 out of these 6 points, you'll be okay, right? You know, just stay in the mix. Do that. If, you know, maybe they get 5. That'd be even better. If they win all 3, hey, great. Again, I could see that happening, but I can see them, you know, getting nothing. So we're gonna have to hope that they can pull points out of here. Okay, so let's rewind back to the first game of the last week, which I'm sure you all heard about by now, was a 4-3 win in overtime over the Toronto Maple Leafs. John Tavares got his 1,000th point. As I said off the top, this is very, very irritating to me. But this became, of course, a huge talking point for the next day. Islanders fans booing the guy the entire game. Same thing that's happened for 6 years every time he visits. You know, it's only a story once or twice a year, but it is a story. There were some insane takes after he scored his 1,000th point. The team put up a congratulatory message on the Jumbotron, and that's great. They're supposed to do something like that, but everybody else was booing, and guess what? They're also kind of supposed to be doing that, too. There were some insane takes. We talked a ton about this on our mailbag over at the Patreon, which of course you can sign up for. And if you sign up today for the Country Club tier, you can listen to that mailbag episode. It's damn near 2 hours long, and the first 20 or so minutes were about this. I also put that out for free, so you can listen to that there too. On the regular feed if you haven't already, but we covered other topics as well. It wasn't 2 hours of John Tavares talk, I promise. But you know, this was, it's still incredible to me that people are still trying to police the fans, as our friend Nick Giglia said in that first question on the mailbag, and it only happens to us. And what's funny is that the Leafs played the Pittsburgh Penguins at home on Saturday, and they won 7-0. It was an absolute ass kicking. And throughout the game, Leafs fans were derisively chanting "Dubas, Dubas" at Penguins GM Kyle Dubas, who was in the arena, which could also be seen as a bit of a classless exhibition for a guy who used to work for your team. I have a whole thing to go on before, but like, you know, I don't want us to repeat ourselves from before, but like, where's your head at now in regards to this? The fear has obviously died down. I think people have gone about their lives. The Dubas thing happened, and it's kind of funny now. But this was really a big thing for a couple of days, and there were some insane, completely insane takes. And I think we're going to talk about one in a second. But like, it was funny. It's sometimes I get annoyed when the Islanders are the bad guys, but in this case, I didn't think we were the bad guys at all. Like, what was your takeaway on this?
Yeah, I thought, and this is why I thought that game ended so poetically, and I was so happy with how it ended, was that as soon as Horvat scored that goal to win in overtime, the narrative was going to shift from like Leafs, Tavares leads Leafs to crazy win and gets his 1,000th point to you know, along the way, to Tavares gets his 1,000th point, Islanders fans boo. The final score doesn't matter. It's a final score is irrelevant, because this, you know, this is the NHL. It's not a results business. It's what does my chart say, and what does my columnist at Sportsnet say? those are the two things that matter in the NHL, apparently. Watching the Leafs celebrate that goal it made me so happy in a way, because I'm like, this is the cringiest team in sports. I think, bar none, cringiest team in sports. I'm sure that there's maybe an NBA team that is maybe a little cringier. I wouldn't know. I don't follow them at all, but I know that.
This is definitely the corniest team.
Yeah.
Easily the corniest, without question.
And that the Morgan Riley, like, being like, come on, guys, come on, friends. Yeah. Like, come on, we got permission to celebrate, so we're going to do it. Like, it was, it made me so happy to watch them do that, because they think like, wow, this looks so cool. This is gonna look so cool on when Josh Cloak tweets out the video that I definitely watch, because I'm a Toronto Maple Leaf.
And they all know they're gonna be on the cover of the media guide next year in this picture, right? So
Austin Matthews is auditioning for a movie role at this simultaneously. Who's gonna play me in the movie when they do the one about John Tavares' 1,000th point against the Islanders? I think he actually said it was like a script. You lost,
right?
The script usually ends with the good guys winning, and it did this night. Like, they score, they do their cute little celebration. The tweets start coming out, fans are booing.
Yeah.
Video board message goes up, 6 seconds left in the game, and the discourse starts as overtime starts. Then the Islanders win.
Right.
Bo Horvat does the same celebration to them, in front of them. And John Tavares, who is a guy who throughout his entire NHL career had this ethos of we over me. Like, that is what he's given credit for more than anything, I think. Like, a team first player. Then watches has a great individual performance in a losing effort, which was the tagline that Carrie Haber came up with in our group chat, and I thought it was nail on the head. I've had a couple people respond to my tweet after the game saying it was like a parable of his career, and I think if you are into this as deep as you and I are, and boy, there was a off-Broadway play written verbatim from our podcast about this particular subject, so we're in pretty deep. You can appreciate the irony of this entire thing, where Tavares and his buddies at his new team celebrate, and then he has to watch the team that he left have the team success that he wasn't able to accomplish here. Then all, you know, the floodgates were open. Everybody got their quill out, wrote their op-eds about the word boo. That is my favorite part. I have a friend in Boston who's so confused by this entire thing, because he said it's the word boo, B-O-O. There's nothing like harassment. There's no harassment. There's nobody is stepping over the line all. Like, this is the word boo at a sporting event. I think that we were saying, like, yeah, you could go to your local gymnasium for a middle school game, basketball game, or you could go to a park and watch 2 4-year-olds playing, and they'll be yelling at each other. They'll be saying worse stuff to each other than,
yeah,
boo, right?
Anybody that plays games online, has heard way worse stuff, which is why I don't play games online. But yes, 100% correct. It's not boo, I'll tell you that.
Exactly, it's not boo. And the word boo then gets taken into the back room of the Athletic and Sportsnet and Zapruder filmed.
Yeah.
About what does this all mean? Why are they doing this to this poor guy? Mm. This poor $11 million a year hockey player, right? Like they're booing. Right. They're booing this multi-millionaire who plays a professional sport on the ice. They're booing him again 6 years after he left them, which he had every right to do. This is getting out of hand. I would die of embarrassment if somebody said boo, like maybe I cut someone unwittingly online at Stop and Shop or something, and somebody said boo, right, boo this man, and Emily then stood up for me and was like, "You can never boo him." Like, can you imagine that?
You're at the drive-through Wendy's, you know, and it's like, so you take guys taking too long, boo, boo, and then get out of the car. What are you doing?
All of a sudden, Chris Johnston, Jonah Siegel, Luke Fox, Jukebox, they all get out of a car and start saying, "Well, that is not savory behavior. I don't care that his double junior bacon cheeseburger is taking a little bit longer.
It's his right to order 4 shakes at the same time. You know, like they take time. It's his right. He's earned that right. He can do that."
Yeah. So everything, you know, everything's going almost according to plan. And the point I was trying to make earlier was that we're the Islanders. We're the New York Islanders. We are fans of the New York Islanders. We knew that this was going to come. This 1,000th point was going to come. I don't care who you are on the Islander fan spectrum. You knew, and you probably joked that earlier that day with your friends, like, I know he's going to score. It's 1,000th point. All things considered, considering that we knew it was going to come, this was probably the best case scenario. Sure, it would have been nice if it didn't like tie the game up, but we knew this was happening and we knew something was going to come. And the Islanders, a minute later, sending him home a loser, watching them celebrate, and it was poetic. It's a win that I will remember forever. I just had so much fun after the game because I knew the discourse was coming. We will talk about. I think we'll talk about our good friend Nick Kyprios.
Well, I was going to bring up Carlo Koliakovo.
Yes.
You know, well, why didn't Islanders fans, you know, it wasn't classy. You know, if you want to boo, but when a guy gets 1,000 points, you should applaud. And our friend Greg Wyshynski replied to him, "That is an insane take." And he was like, "What do you mean? Showing respect is insane?" He's like, "No, asking people that have been booing this guy for 6 years to just stop for a second, golf clap, and then go right back to booing. What are you talking about?" That to me was my insane take. But yeah, Kyprios was also. This heel turn is very disturbing to me.
It was.
That he made. Yeah.
And yeah, Koliakova wasn't the only one to have that take, too, which is even crazier. Then Kyprios goes. We knew that someone like Luke Fox Jukebox or Chris Johnston or Jonas Siegel were good candidates to completely jump the shark in this thing. Kyprios has, even though he played for the Leafs, and he goes into the Toronto Maple Leafs alumni box with his blazer on every now and then. For the most part, is he's on our side of the of the aisle in this case.
He was.
And the thing that changed his mind, of course, was John Tavares' poor dad had to wear a jacket over his Toronto Maple Leafs jersey, his number 91. JB, I saw a dad who was afraid to take off his coat in a suite because he didn't want people to see he was wearing 91 Tavares.
You don't think he would be assaulted by those people for wearing that jersey in that arena?
I know he was walked in with security. I know it.
Yeah.
Nick, what are you smoking, buddy?
Yeah.
I didn't see that one coming. I think there's so much of our podcast, which is devoted to projecting thoughts onto people that don't know we exist.
Right.
And especially sports writers up in Toronto. And I think we're actually pretty good at it, which is a really useful talent to have. But I did not see this one coming at all. No. And I didn't see that being the thing that did it. Because I had someone text me saying, they just showed, they played the Rangers the next night. And they just, he goes, they just showed John Tavares' dad in the suite. He was wearing a jacket at MSG2.
Please, somebody send that to Nick Kiprios, please. Please. Oh my God. Are you serious? So the dude's just cold. He's sometimes older people, he's they get cold. He's just cold. How it is. I mean, you know,
well, that's like, so did funny. He think that, my like, God. There were, like, this was a setup where, yeah. we're, what we're gonna do is we're gonna have the Leafs do their dad's trip to UBS Arena and we're gonna kidnap his dad for what is he talking about?
I don't know, but this
that's
is
how crazy this has driven people.
It's driven people crazy, and like I said before, you know, the Islanders played the bad guy role as they often do, and I did not think that Islanders fans did anything wrong. It, like you said, they were booing a guy who they're gonna keep booing forever, basically, and booing even louder when he gets it. That why would we cheer a guy getting his 1,000th point to tie a game with, like, what was it, 6 seconds left? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Who cares what he did, who you know, where he played 6 years ago? Like, it's ridiculous that the idea that we're supposed to hold this guy, put this guy on a pedestal for what he did for the Islanders for, you know, 9 years, 6 years ago, it just doesn't make any sense. I don't get it, but that's how they think, because to them, John Tavares is the nicest guy in the world, and he might very well be, but to us, he's a villain. And so I've been thinking about this. I had this in my head because this is the last word I'm going to say on this. And then we're going to move on to a Master Leaf Theater in a second, because we have some more ridiculousness to go through. But here's my thing. Okay. As I've said many times, I am old. Okay. I've seen a lot, especially with the Islanders. And so they called Islanders fans trash in 72 when the team won 12 games and half the Coliseum was Rangers fans. Okay. They called Islanders fans trash when the Islanders gooned it up with the Leafs in 78. They called us trash when Potvin hit Nilsson in 79. They called us trash when Billy Smith swung his stick at Gretzky in 83. They called us trash in 1990 when Vokoda and Baumgartner avenged Pat LaFontaine. They called us trash when the entire franchise was a toxic waste dump for the large part of the rest of the decade. They called us trash when Cairns obliterated Shane Corson in 2002. They called us trash when Haley and Martin and Trevor Gillies obliterated the Penguins in 2011. They called us trash when we booed Tavares the first time he came back in 2019. They called us trash when Beauvillier scored in game 6 against the Lightning and we threw everything that wasn't nailed down onto the ice in celebration. Then they called us trash now when Tavares comes back and scores point number 1,000. We've always been the bad guy. We're never not going to be the bad guy. We've always been the bad guy. Like, there's never a situation when we're not the bad guy. And that's just how it's going to be. Whether we didn't show up at all or we show up and we're too loud, we're always the bad guy. So we can never win. Okay. And that's just how it's going to be. And if you think that we are too loud and we are too passionate about something that you think is silly, maybe you should check your own fandom temperature. Because I guarantee you that it's probably going to come in way below ours. So that's my last word on this. I'm happy to wear the black hat in this situation. I really am. I usually am not, but I really, like, in this case, I'm sorry. Like, we've never not been, especially in the eyes of Toronto people, we've never not been the bad guy. Yep. So, hey, whatever, man. That's how it's going to be. I can't help it. Yep. So that's my last word.
I love subject. It. Yep. Think about all the famous black hats and
yeah.
In history, you know, or movie theaters, or sure. movie villains, or TV right. villains.
They want us to be Darth Vader.
Yeah, right. Darth Vader.
They want us to be Darth Vader and the Stormtroopers. That's what we are. We just are.
Yeah. And what's our superpower? Oh, we boo this guy. Watch out.
Right. Yeah. We boo this guy one night or two nights before cheering another guy who played for less games and scored less goals, but we love him anyway. And now a word from our sponsors. First is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, jerseys, mugs, and more featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. Vintage Ice Hockey also carries our Al Arbor and the Island merch, and our portion of the sales always go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. Use the code ANXIETY20 to save 20% off an order of 2 items. That is VintageIceHockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. They offer a rosé, a Pinot Grigio, and a Pinot Noir that was named a 2022 Top 100 Best Buy by Wine Enthusiast Magazine. All are delicious, priced at less than $15 a bottle, and available at local wine shops and at UBS Arena. Learn more at thepinotproject.com. Please drink responsibly. The fine folks at FOCO have gifts for every fan this holiday season. Click the link in the podcast description to read their 2023 holiday gift guide, which is packed with apparel, accessories, toys, and collectibles covering sports from across the globe. That's FOCO, FOCO.com. One last Leaf things to get to. As I said, they played the Penguins. They won. Good on them. And the Penguins are having a bad season. But it was the return of Kyle Dubas. And so we have to mark the occasion with a new edition of Master Leaf Theater. This is by our friend Luke Fox Jukebox. And I know we've said we're not going to bully this guy and we're not going to make everyone about him. I feel like we're going to park this segment for a little bit unless something crazy happens. They next play the Leafs in February, so maybe we'll do something then. But we couldn't let this go because it was too momentous. So I sent this to you. Did you read this? It's called Dubas Circles Toronto Return on His Calendar. Did you have a chance to check this out?
Yeah. I mean, we are ragging on the guy, of course, but yeah. I read everything he writes. Everything. I can't put it down, honestly. And of course, yeah. I read this and I was really excited to hear that it is going to be an installment on Master Leaf Theater.
And you know, it's not the craziest thing we've ever read, but it is dramatic in the way that these guys like, and particularly Luke Fox Jukebox likes to write. And of course it casts Dubas as this towering figure of such monumental import that his very presence will affect the Leafs. And it's just the kind of thing where like the headline says one thing and then you go through the story and it's like, well, it doesn't sound like that's true. It doesn't sound like he circled this return on his calendar, because as we find out early, he didn't even talk to the reporters that when he came back. Just so insane. So let me get this. So this happened actually before the game. Again, the final was 7-0 Leafs. So Kyle Dubas did not have a good time in his return to Toronto, to say the least. And this isn't the first paragraph, but it's pretty short. So we'll get to it through pretty quickly. But Luke Fox writes this. He goes, handpicked by Leafs president Brendan Shanahan 9 years before his sudden and prickly firing by the same man, Dubas declined to sit down with Hockey Night in Canada for his return in black and gold. But that doesn't make him any less of a story here. Coming in at a pretty young age with all the pressure here in this market, where else is better to learn as a young person in that job? Sidney Crosby told reporters Friday at the Leafs practice facility, home of Dubas's old office. He handled it great. Obviously, they've had some great teams over the years. Regular season records and postseason regrets. A Calder Cup with the Marlies, and the big club's first playoff series victory in a generation. A long list of shrewd moves, getting Zach Hyman, and stubborn ones, losing Zach Hyman. Yes, definitely this is all about Zach Hyman. Most of all, a belief in a nucleus that is still hunting a playoff run deep enough to silence the haters and rile up the loyalists. Dubas returns with a new/old core four. Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, and his summertime splash/gamble, Erik Karlsson, that holds the hopes of the league's oldest team. The average age of Pittsburgh's roster is 31. The Penguins have rings, but they're also in danger of going 6 consecutive years without winning a playoff round. Sound familiar? I mean, what is that? That's not even like 200 words, right? And it's like perfectly encapsulates like I hate this phrase. I really do. And I hate myself. I'm going to kick myself for using it, but it just illustrates just how rent-free this guy lives in the heads of all these people, right? And then the fact that Leafs fans were derisively like, they were given, that's, to me, that's the Hextall chant or the straw or the Daryl chant. If you're an old Mets fan, you know, Daryl, the strawberry, like, it's just so funny to me that like they're on our case for booing a guy who did us pretty dirty. And yet they're totally cool with booing this guy who, you know, did them a little dirty too. Like he said, you know, you love to point it out. He's like, oh yeah, I'm not going to go find a new job next week. And then what, 3 weeks later, he had a new job.
I don't think it was even 3 weeks. Yeah,
I know. So we're all fans, dude. We're all fans. Like, I don't understand. Luke Fox is a fan. He just happens to have a job at Sportsnet. Like, I don't understand. It's just, yeah. I don't know.
it's so fun. When I saw that the chants were coming out, because I was waiting for the tribute video. It's really a shame. And if I had any, if I was our friend Mike Smith is an actor, and if I had any chops, I would have written, writing, editing, video kind of chops. I would have loved to wrote the marketing meeting or like the team executive meeting of on the decision of whether or not they're going to give Kyle Dubas a tribute video. You know, that to me, it would be for an audience of 8. But I think it would be an incredible video to kind of dissect that conversation and the ridiculousness of why this insane crop of sports writers / fans has completely changed the culture surrounding a team's media presence. Like,
yeah,
they are the only team in sports that is covered like this. There are other big market teams in other sports. They are not covered like, oh, these are my friends.
Right.
I'm writing in my eighth grade, school blog about my friends and their flag football team. Like, it's an insane thing that has become normalized somehow. They are one of our friends in our group chat called the Islanders they're kind of like AP literature when nobody does the homework. Like, everyone just knows the spark notes about the Islanders, and that's how they get covered. And the Leafs, I feel like they're covered as if every one of their beat writers is a political staffer for a Veep sort of way,
right?
Like that kind of politician. If you go on the whether it's Luke Fox Jukebox or Jonas Siegel or Joshua Cloak, if you stop by their Twitter, Chris Johnston, if you stop by their Twitters during a Leafs loss, it never gets mentioned. Just as if for a politician, like when they do something bad, it you don't hear about from these people until 9 a.m. the next day. You know, Representative so and so is at the ribbon cutting for the new bakery in town. This is how the Leafs get covered. And that happened with the Dubas chant I think Jonas Siegel was in the press box wearing a poppy and a black armband. he didn't tweet anything about the game. He did his own little silent protest, his own Kyle Dubas version of Tiananmen Square protesting for all the world to see. I did like some fun Twitter searches from the game, and there were some Leafs fans giving it to Jonas about like how hard it must have been to hear the chants. And those chants, by the way, so the Islanders booed John Tavares on Monday. Jordan Kyrou gets booed by his own fans Thursday. The Leafs get booed off the ice on Thursday as well, and then Kyle Dubas gets the chant. And there's one fan base that that gets any shtick for the way that they acted, which is hilarious. But I think, the way that the Penguins season is going under Dubas has been great. He are unequivocally committed to Mike Sullivan in a way that he unequivocally committed to not taking another job after getting fired from the Leafs. And I'm so excited for him to fire Mike Sullivan and just to put those two tweets right next to each other 6 months to the day. You can't write it. All this stuff was chicken soup for the soul to watch unfold, because when you're as petty as we are, here on the island. These are the moments you really live for and you work hard for.
Yeah, I agree. And yes, that I hadn't thought about the Kairu thing too, but yeah, nobody's like, why are Blues fans booing him? Like, well, they just fired your coach. Well, I mean, Doug Armstrong said it himself and they talked about this on 32 Thoughts. Like, as soon as he fired Craig Berube, and credit to Doug Armstrong for recognizing this, as soon as they fired Craig Berube, he went from the coach who couldn't get the most out of the roster to the coach who won them a Stanley Cup. So now he's like our buddy, you know, but Jordan Kairou said, oh, he's not my coach anymore. I don't have a comment. And all of a sudden he started getting booed. So then he was crying afterwards. So, I mean, again, only one fan base gets policed in the way that the Islanders fans do when it comes to booing. And I just find it very, very funny. Your thing real quick before we move on, your point about the way they're covered is also great too, because, like, you know, we're from New York, like, who gets covered more stringently than the Yankees here, right? Or I mean, look at the Jets. The Jets lost 30-0 today, and the knives are going to be out, right? As if they haven't been already. And you are not going to find anybody that covers Woody Johnson, Zach Wilson, Robert Saleh, anybody on the Jets, like anybody gets covered with the Leafs. Maybe you'll find somebody be like, you know, this isn't really Sauce Gardner's fault, like that kind of thing, but that's about it. So yeah, I do find it funny, you know?
Because they've been covering this team.
Right.
When Dubas took over the Leafs and then they signed Tavares, they all had this kind of vision in their head of, here's, you know, Dubas and Tavares on a Stanley Cup float down whatever street in Toronto. First, you know, they break the drought. And they're covering the team as if that stuff has happened. Like, this is the universe that they are living in, is that universe. Like, oh yeah, the Leafs, they won the Stanley Cup with Dubas and Tavares. Like, look at these two guys are joined at the hip. You know, he's got the core four who have brought all the success to this team. Mm. And you need to, I would love to pull Luke Fox jukebox aside and say, dude, they've been a massive failure relative to expectations.
Right.
You know, they are the team with Austin Matthews. They're the team with that has the biggest free agent coup in NHL history. They are the team with the Wonder Boy GM, with William Nylander, with Mitch Marner, with like the you know, the star nucleus in the biggest market, the most money to spend outside of the cap, as we are reminded all the time. They are that team, and they've won one playoff round since 2003. So they are a massive, massive failure. They're not the team that you guys cover. If to your point, if the Yankees right now are going through a down stretch, and everybody wants the head of the general manager who led them to the dynasty. Like, you know, like, this is, there's very little, you know, there's not a groundswell around Brian Cashman.
I was going to just mention Cashman, because, like, I remember when he got the job, he was very young and he's been on the job now for 20 odd years. And like, if they covered him the way Dubas is covered, they would have had statues built of him, you know. Right. Meanwhile, the Yankees haven't won a World Series since 2009, and everybody wants him fired. I just was scrolling down the Luke Fox article we read from before, and he does mention Jordan Kairou, and then he writes this thing here. This is in regards to the Kairou situation. He writes, absolutely, the paying public has a right to boo. Also, we can forget that well-paid athletes are humans too. Clearly that one stung. Oh, we have a right to boo. Well, thanks for giving us permission there, Luke Fox jukebox. So anyway, if you've stuck with us this whole time through Leafs chat here, I really appreciate it. I think we're going to park Leafs chat for a little while. I know it gets a little bit much, but obviously this was Leafs week, as we said last week. So we wanted to tie a bow around it. The Dubas return game kind of gave us a chance to do that. We're going to give it a rest for a little while, but we will be back.
Yeah, but don't worry. We get the Penguins. We get the Penguins a couple times over the next few weeks here, so.
We do. So we'll be back with another Master Leaf Theater at some point. Hopefully it's not involved. Doesn't involve the Leafs. We can, you know, we got six other teams we can worry about, but we really do appreciate you sticking with us throughout that time. Okay. A couple of notes real quick before we wrap this up. Sign up for the Patreon through December to get your iron on patch for Islanders Anxiety Club. A lot of people have already signed up. We really, really appreciate it. You have a couple more weeks, or at least another week and a half. So once January 1st comes around, those patches go away. So for how long, I have no idea. So don't wait. Get on there. You got some Christmas money. You have some Hanukkah money coming to you. Use it on a subscription to the Patreon Islanders Anxiety. Use it to sign up for the Country Club tier at the Islanders Anxiety Patreon page, patreon.com/Islanders Anxiety. This Friday, we have a new episode of Weird Islanders coming out. It is absolutely fantastic. It's perfect for the holidays. It features a friend of ours, and it was the first one we recorded this year. So it was from way back in September, but it ended up being perfect for the holidays. It includes a story that is very personal and very heartfelt and very touching, and frankly is way too good for Weird Islanders, the podcast, but we're glad our friend told us. And it's with a player who is one of the number one guys on the list. He's like, yeah, he played for the Islanders. So I can't wait for people to hear this.
I was so excited to talk about this player since the inception of Weird Islanders. They were like four or five players in my mind of like guys that were the almost like the hallmark, the poster boy of Weird Islanders. And this was one of the players. So I'm so excited that people finally get to hear this one.
Absolutely. And then that is on Friday. So please listen to it. I know it's a crazy busy time, but I'm telling you, take an hour out of your Christmas time and just sit and listen to it because it's fantastic. And with that said, next week Sunday is Christmas Eve. Monday is Christmas Day. We won't be recording those days, obviously. We will be back on the 26th to record. Don't know what time yet. We'll have to figure it out at that time, which works best. If we record early in the morning, I could put it out in the afternoon. If we end up recording at night, probably most likely at night, it'll end up coming out on the 27th when the Islanders play the Pittsburgh Penguins. But either way, the 26th is the next day we're going to record, so it'll come out that day or the next day. But again, it's Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. Everybody's got something else to do. So we are going to be off that day. And then the week after, we're going to have to figure out what's going on New Year's week. We might end up not recording that week either, but we'll have to see. But in any event, before I forget, have a Merry Christmas, because this is the last time we'll talk to you before then. Hope it's a good one. Hope Santa Claus brings you all kinds of fun stuff. Hopefully he can bring the Islanders some wins. Follow us on Twitter at Isles Anxiety Pod. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and at Spotify. Our theme music is Morning Haze by Family Dinner. Listen to more of their music on Bandcamp and Spotify also. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Islanders Anxiety Podcasts are part of the Fans First Sports Network. Find out about more podcasts at fansfirstsports.com. Shop vintageicehockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. Take a look at Foco's holiday gift guide. There's still time to get stuff in. Might not come by Christmas, but you can still order it now. There's a lot of cool stuff in there. Mike, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lee Basket with two E's.
Follow Mike at the Big Lee Basket. Read and listen to his work at Action Network. Read his work in the New York Post, because boy, oh boy, it's your favorite time of year. And I'm not talking about Christmas. It is darts season. Yep. Bring us all up to date really quickly on the darts tournament that is happening currently.
Yeah. World Darts Championship, which is the big one, is going on for the next couple weeks over at the Ali Pally Alexandra Palace in England, in London. I was lucky enough to go last year. Hopefully get to go again, maybe next year. So far, there've been a couple highlights. One was that Cameron Menzies won his first round match. He is a plumber and couldn't get off the day of his first round match. So he was plumbing. Funny. He sent out a tweet of him in someone's bathroom, plumbing at 11, darts at 8. So that was great to see. There is a player, Jamie Hughes, who's just kind of like a weathered, unlucky. He's kind of like the Cleveland Browns of darts, I guess you could say. He just always seems to be on the short end of the stick. He's never won a match at the World Championship and barely qualified this season. And then he won his round one match. He was a favorite to win the match. Like, he beat a guy who he should have beat, and he broke down crying because it meant so much. So that was quite nice to see so too. Funny. But yeah, it's just the beginning. Like, we're 5 days into a 15 or 16 day tournament, or more than that, actually. It's like 20 days. Be sure to keep your eyes out for it. It's about to start ramping up a bit too.
And is that why it takes so long? Because like, dudes have other jobs and stuff.
Yeah, it's well, there's a lot. Like, there's 96 players in the field.
Oh, and, wow.
Okay. Yeah, and they give everybody off for Christmas. So like Christmas Eve, Christmas, and then Christmas the day after Christmas, everyone it gets off, and then they come back. And it's a 3 week tournament basically that ends either the day after New Year's Day or 2 days after New Year's Day, depending on where it falls in the calendar. And it's never not funny to me that it's become such a big thing over there that Christmas and the darts are kind of like the NFL and Thanksgiving. Like, when it's become such a holiday tradition for people in Europe and me, I guess, now too. And
that's cool.
So it puts you in a good mood, and yeah, it's been quite fun to watch, and cool. I'm excited to watch a bunch more tomorrow. No morning sessions tomorrow, only in the evening. Right.
Is it on MSG again, or are they? I think not
it's like
that?
Randomly it'll pop up there. It's okay. But yeah, you can like just find it online if you have to, and or even
do like a Twitter search, because the GIFs of like some of these crazy shots and stuff will go live. So definitely take a look.
Yeah, there's a great one to just keep an eye out for on Tuesday. A German player. His name is Ricardo Petrechko. His nickname is Pikachu. Pikachu a couple weeks ago won a European championship title, and then it was a great story. And then his next tournament, the crowd was booing him because he was playing Bo Greaves, who's a young woman who's like lighting up the tour and is like on her way to being not just one of the best women to play, but could be like one of the best players.
Really?
when she clicks into like her prime. And so he couldn't like fathom why he was the villain in the situation, and because he had just won a huge tournament, like, and it was a good story, and he had a meltdown on stage, and he's playing another female player in his first round matchup on Tuesday, and the crowd is just going to you think that what we did to John Tavares was bad, Luke Fox Jukebox, wait to see what Pikachu's got to deal with on Tuesday night.
I was gonna say, wow, this not realizing when they're the bad guys, go figure. I guess it happens to everybody, but we'll have to keep an eye out for that. And if you have any questions or have any interest at all in the World Darts Championship, hit up Mike on Twitter or an email or anywhere, or even on the Patreon, because he is your man and he knows more than anybody on these shores, I promise you. But that'll do it for us this week. Again, have a Merry Christmas. We'll be back the day after, and we'll see where the Islanders are at after these next three games. All right. Thanks a lot for listening. Take care. We'll talk to you later.